gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Are you okay?
Wow.
A body fell on the board. That's fine.
Yes.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEPH-1-2. The phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. The website, check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoy. Voice Dee Dee, Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller. Oh, Jim's slated to be here in the first hour, but he is?
Is late.
All right.
I got a call from about 10 minutes. I'm just getting on the freeway.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Perfect. The show may explode.
Yes.
Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Oscar winner.
That's right. For Capote.
Yes. This hour also Representative Loretta Sanchez, our homegirl from out here in California. Next hour, hello, Oscar nominee Joan Allen. Hello. I will pester her endlessly about The Contender, my favorite movie of hers.
But she's in a new movie about dogs.
Oh, I know. Wait till you hear about the new movie she's in. About if you're a dog lover, oh, forget about it.
And Richard Gere's in that movie, too.
Oh, it's a... okay. And then live in studio with us, Marcos Melitzis from Daily Kos.
That's right.
He is Kos. He's the Kos in Kos.
The second syllable.
Kos in Kos.
The second
exactly.
syllable
here.
Of his first name is...
By Kos. The way, also Emmy winner Harry Shearer joins us live in studio in hour number 3. And I think we should point out Jim Ward, Emmy winner.
That's right.
Yes. Good thing I won't be here when he gets when he arrives.
That'd be too
be
many.
Rumble.
Yeah, we have a rule. We can't have more than one Emmy winner in the studio at a time. Too many egos.
Well, actually, he's going to be with us via ISDN, which is Radio Magic. So he's not going to be actually in the studio.
You didn't have to pull the curtain back. No one would have known.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
I believe he's going to be calling us from the New Orleans Bureau of Stephanie Miller International.
Well, push five buttons.
All right. So now the suspense that we are feeling now. While we await Philip Seymour Hoffman,
yes,
is whether he will have any idea who I am and remember me,
no.
As Geraldo Rivera did not in one of the most humiliating interviews of my life a week or two ago, where he did the entire interview thinking I was an entirely different radio personality altogether.
I thought you were Stephanie Mflagenhardin.
I knew Geraldo. I worked with him when I hosted Equal Time.
You sat on his lap?
Or no Geraldo?
I sat on his lap at his office at CNBC in Secaucus.
That's creepy.
It was a joke. Anyway... But yeah, I hosted Equal Time for a year with Babe Buchanan,
right.
And anyway, so I'm...
You know that slag was sat on my lap, I remember now.
Yeah.
I bet you'd remember Babe Buchanan.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was all chuckling with him, we did the entire interview, didn't we, Chris?
And he thought you were Leslie Marshall.
Yes, he did. He's like, you're great on the O'Reilly Fact. I'm like, what? I'm not on the O'Reilly... What?
Oh, I like you at the Rose Parade. You did great work. You're not Stephanie Edwards?
Oh. I love you in Remington Steel.
Stephanie Zimbalist? Wow. Actually, you kind of look like Stephanie Zimbalist back then.
I wish. anyway, yeah, so that was kind of humorous. Because it wasn't until the very end of the interview, too, that he was like, oh, you're the... Oh, with your dad ran with... Okay, see ya. So, Philip Seymour Hoffman, I'm just guessing, will probably have no memory whatsoever who I am.
Doesn't ring a bell, no. Not
yes, because I did off-Broadway theater with him back in 19...
What show? Flarkin.
We weren't in the same show. We were in a series of one acts by the Naked Angels Theater Company back in 1989.
Was everyone actually naked?
No.
Oh, well.
No. It's, no. Oh, look, I see the phone ringing. Let it please be him. Well, let me just say, Jim, as you know, I've been delusional for many years, so I think we went on a date.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think he does. I think that I was hoping it was. I think we just went for coffee. But I sort of conflated it.
No, you went to Sardi's to read the reviews.
As chicks do.
Yes, and I dreamed that I lived in the same house with Daphne Zuniga. Oh, wait, I did.
But
not in that way.
Right. We keep plumbing you for information about that whole period and nothing.
There's nothing.
Nothing happened?
Nothing to talk about. Nope. Zip, zilch, nada.
My imaginary gentleman caller is on the phone for me. Philip Seymour Hoffman, Oscar winner. Good morning, Philip.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know if you probably haven't heard, but I've been talking about you now for 5 minutes. You probably don't have any memory of who I am. Do you? We did off Broadway together, like in 1989, the Naked Angels Theater Company.
Oh, really?
See? I told you. yeah, we did, you know, remember...
The Naked Angels. What play is that?
Well, remember we did a series of one acts. It was the Naked Angels Theater Company, and we used to hang out in the back of the theater and talk. I did a little comedy piece, and see, this is the thing. I conflated this. I had the biggest crush on you ever.
Oh, really?
Yes.
One act for Naked Angels. What one
acts
were they?
I don't. You were brilliant, of course, in something. I don't remember what it was.
It was. Wow.
But even then, I was like, that guy's going to be a huge star. And, you know, and congratulations. I mean, seriously, what an amazing career.
Thank you.
Now, tell me, this is your first, it's called Jack Goes Boating. It's the new movie you directed and star in.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it.
It's about this married couple, Clyde and Lucy, that are played by John Ortiz and Daphne Rivavega, and they set up their coworkers on a date. Clyde works as a limousine driver with this guy named Jack, who I play, and Lucy works with a woman named Connie, who's played by Amy Ryan.
Oh, wow.
And they think these two would do well together, and they have a Chinese dinner party at their apartment for them. And that dinner party goes badly, but it's pretty clear that these two they find the mountain to climb in each other, you know what I mean? They're drawn to each other. And it's just kind of how those two, you know, deal with how to accept that fact and try to come together and have a relationship. And the married couple, and, you know, while we keep watch that story, we see them start to implode, you know, and that their history is catching up with them, and that their relationship is a pretty diseased one, you know, and then it's also about the friendship between, you know, Clyde and Jack, you know, and how that's a pretty amazing relationship in the film also. So you're really watching these three relationships kind of evolve.
It's a great cast, and it's your directorial debut. How did that feel for you?
It was great. You know, I had been directing with the theater company that the story came out of for many, many years, and so when we were approached to make a film of this, you know, John Ortiz suggested that I should direct the film, you know, and it's something that I thought that I might do just because directing is something I am interested in and have been doing, but I hadn't done it in film yet, even though I'd been acting in film for 20 years, you know, and so it seemed like the right thing to do, you know, it felt like the right thing to do and the right time to do it and the right project to do it with, you know, well, and I love the job. It's a great job. It really is a great job.
Philip, you know, they always, I know this is probably the question that gets asked the most, but it always seems to me so difficult to act and direct in the same film. Did you find it that way or no?
Yeah, I think it's extraordinarily difficult. I don't know how people do it.
Do you criticize yourself and then get in a fight with yourself? If
yeah, it's too much attention. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, when you're directing, it's about other people. You know what I mean? When you're acting, you're dealing with yourself. But when you have to direct yourself dealing with yourself, it's just a bit too much. You know what I mean? You need help. You need somebody else to help you with that. Because
right.
You know, acting is a real subjective thing. It's very hard to be objective about yourself. And you got to watch yourself on playback all the time because you're directing it, and you have to kind of watch what's happening and make sure you got it. And, you know, and it does a number on your ego for sure. You know,
right.
But I had some great people there who helped me do it, though, and I got through it, you know.
Right, right. Philip, I mean, as everybody knows, but I'm just even looking at the list here. I mean, not only Capote, but Scent of a Woman, Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Cold Mountain, Almost Famous. You've done so many films. I mean, I guess that's a kind of a trite question, too. Do you have a favorite? but do you?
Not really, no. Because all the experiences I've had, like with anybody's life, all the experiences are so wildly different. You know what I mean? And so
right.
they're all pleasurable for different reasons. So it's really hard to say that about really anything, I guess. You know, because they're not comparable in a way. But I've had some great experiences. I definitely have.
Well, Capote was one of those just amazing performances where you just dissolved into the character. I mean, I don't even, you know, it's interesting. Because I know you don't remember, but I started with you when you were a baby actor. I mean, you know, is that sort of, you know, the way you envision your career, the way it's unfolded?
You have to be more specific. I don't think this is fair. You're being very general about this memory.
No, you know what?
The vague one act that we did at the Naked Angels.
No, it's...
And you keep, like, going, like, you don't remember. Like, what am I supposed to remember?
You know what? Here, I'll tell you what my memory is, because you were so kind and generous even back then. And I know you don't remember this, but you used to sit back in the back of the theater every night and watch my... I had, like, I'm a comedian, so it was a comedic, mm-hmm. you know... Mine was like a single person thing. I'm trying to remember exactly what you were in. You were in a couple of the other one acts in that series, but I remember you told me you sat and watched me because you thought I was so good and you wanted to learn. And I remember even then laughing hysterically, knowing how successful your career was going to be and what a disaster my acting career. I was like, he is so kind and generous to say that.
That's great. I wish I could go back there right now. I really do, so I could just see it and go, oh, right, okay.
Well, I thought, you know, but I thought, that's probably a great actor. I mean, that's how, you know, you probably are such a sponge. Like, you probably learned from so many people. I mean, it's like a joke that you learned anything from me. But what I'm saying is, you know, to have this kind of career, I mean, you must have learned from every actor and director you worked with.
I enjoy being an audience, being the audience member. I really do. I probably enjoy it as much as being the actor, if not more than being the actor sometimes. I've always been that way. I really enjoy watching people do what they do, you know. And
well,
because if it's being done well, it's a great pleasure of mine. I really do. I'm going to see people perform who do it well is probably one of the great, if not one of the best pleasures I have.
Well, I'm guessing you learned maybe almost as much working with Al Pacino as you did watching me. What was it like working with Al Pacino?
Well, you know, I was 24 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and we were, there's that one scene we're in together, but we don't really talk to each other. So
right.
I didn't really get to know him, you know.
Yeah.
I just kind of watched him work, you know, and I liked that.
Yeah.
I was able to do that because of the nature of the scene. I could sit there, I'd spend the whole day not having to worry about that I was going to act that day and watch him do his thing.
Yeah.
And I did learn, a lot from that. I do learn a lot from watching people who are like him,
well,
you know, work.
I certainly
see what they're doing.
I certainly hope the next time James Lipton asks you, you mention me and Al Pacino as your influences.
Absolutely.
The movie is Jack Goes Boating, the wildly talented Philip Seymour Hoffman directing and starring in it. Philip, thanks so much. Great to talk to you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right.
Did I ever tell you about the time Tim Robbins directed me in a play with Billy Zane?
Oh,
and he gave
God.
Me a bit of direction. I'll never forget. He said, stop dropping names. You know, Sting told me that very thing the other day.
19 minutes after the
hour. Oh, God.
Right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
I love it! I don't get it, but I love it!
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Stephanie Miller.
You gotta hand it to me. I am plucky.
Yes.
I knew Philip Seymour Hoffman would have no memory of who I am, and I still go for it.
Yeah, you did.
So like Jim said, not only did not remember who I am, he didn't remember the whole theater company, anything.
No.
Yeah, it was 20 years ago.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I did theater? What?
That was back when Mama was on Broadway.
Stephanie Miller.
They drummed you right out of Hollywood.
Yeah.
So you come crawling back to Broadway. Well, Broadway doesn't go for booze and dope. Now you get out of my way, because I've got a man waiting for me.
That's how long ago that was.
I actually did
a show on Broadway.
Did you?
It was Broadway in
Albany. Did you serve him?
Yes, it was a benefit for the Museum of Broadcasting or something, where the Marx Brothers thing, Lost Radio. Shows Dick Cavett played Groucho, and Gene Shalit was the announcer guy.
You were in a production with Gene Shalit?
Yes, Gene Shalit and Dick Cavett, and I played Chico and about 19 other parts.
I didn't know
this
Gene
Shalit. This show is just comprised of show business oddities.
I didn't know Gene Shalit acted.
Neither did Gene Shalit.
Well, he was just sort of the...
Or because he looked like Groucho.
No, he didn't play Groucho.
Mm. Okay. All right, we have some breaking news for parents out there.
Yes, Similac baby formula recalled because it may contain chunks of beetle.
Well, then technically it's Beetlejuice.
Oh, that's so clever. I thought it had balls, but he can go in his place of his nose and he wouldn't miss it, really.
All right. Wow. So guess what, kids?
A snorkel. Climb with the trombone hooter like yours. It would be all natural if you didn't.
No, not that kind of beetle.
No.
Oh,
different beetle entirely. Yes. Not pieces of the actual beetles.
It's pieces of actual beetle.
That's funny. Yes. Okay. So, guess what, kids? The healthcare laws has kicked in. What?
Yeah.
Who knew? The president talking.
The most important patient's bill of rights that we've ever seen in our history.
Yeah, here's the depressing news. I'm looking at this AP poll. People still don't know what it is. Listen, pay attention, everybody. Here's the fun facts. 6 months after President Obama signed the landmark health care law, the nation still doesn't really know what's in it. This is
death
where...
battles!
Exactly. Because the Republicans scream louder.
Yep.
They're going to force us to get gay French abortions.
There are very few gay French abortions in the health care bill, FYI.
They're making us have dates on satanic altars.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, that's that other chick. Yeah,
that's the Republicans.
It's like they say in The American President, people will listen to anyone that steps up to the microphone, Mr. President, if you
people
don't.
People want leadership, Mr. President.
That's right.
In the absence of genuine leadership, they'll listen to anyone who steps up to the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
They want leadership.
Yes.
They're so thirsty for it, they'll crawl through the desert toward a mirage, and when they discover there's no water, they'll drink the sand.
People don't drink the sand because they're thirsty. They drink the sand because they don't know the difference.
They're going to make us drink sand!
See? Now I just put out another myth. Stephanie Miller says they're going to make us drink sand. That's in the health care bill. The American president has never been more relevant, has it? Like with the likes of Tea Party candidates like Christine O'Donnell. These are serious times, Jim, for God's sake.
We have serious problems to solve, and we need serious people to solve them.
So is President Obama going to have an affair with Annette Bening?
Yes.
Would you two pay attention? This
what?
Is why people are so dopey about the health care bill. More than half of Americans mistakenly believe the overhaul will raise taxes for most people this year, as the Associated Press poll finds. No.
Computer says no.
That would only be true if you're devoted to indoor tanning. Only the boner. Which got hit with a sales tax. Many who wanted the healthcare system to be overhauled don't realize that some provisions they cared about actually did make it in. And about a quarter of supporters don't understand that something hardly anyone wanted didn't make it. They mistakenly say the law will set up panels of bureaucrats to make decisions about people's care. What critics label death panels.
Computer says no.
No!
Morons.
We'll go over what's in it. Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez next as we continue on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
That's one of the things that attracted me to you, your sense of right and wrong. I also like your hair and your face and your breasts.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour, the extravaganza continues apace. Actress Joan Allen coming up. Marcos Moulitsos of Daily Kos live in studio, and Harry Shearer live in studio in hour number three today. Check us out. All right, 1-800-STEPH-12, the phone number, toll-free from anywhere. One of our very personal favorites from the great state of California, Representative Loretta Sanchez. Good morning, Congresswoman.
Hello, Stephanie.
Hello there. Congresswoman, let me start with something we were just talking about before the break, and I'm sure you've heard about it, this new Associated Press poll, talking about how people still don't know what's in the health care bill that kicks in today. And it must be frustrating for people like you and the president.
Well, it's a little frustrating, but it's also very optimistic because, you know, as much as the Republicans have been saying, oh, this is a terrible thing, this is going to put us in a big hole, oh, nobody's going to have health care, as much as they've been saying and trying to muddy up the waters, the fact of the matter is when we do get out there, when we do hold health care forums, when we talk to people on an individual basis and we walk them through in their situation what it looks like now under the old health care system and what it will look under the new one, everybody looks at me and says, my God, you know, I got to go back and read about this. This
right.
is actually a really good thing.
Well, you know, in some ways, Congresswoman, you're right. You have to hope that maybe we start from today because, you know, I was just reading in the poll, people think it's going to raise taxes. That is incorrect. People were asked whether the CBO had ruled that it would increase the debt. They think it will. Well, of course it won't. As the president has said many times, it's going to reduce the deficit. I think it's I love this. 81% in the survey got the wrong answer, including majorities of both supporters and opponents. Overall, 3 out of 10 in the poll say they favor the law. I have to hope, and I'm still hopeful, that this is going to be like Social Security and Medicare, which weren't popular immediately, right? But over time, as people did understand the truth.
Yeah, but there was no Fox News in those days.
Yeah.
So what it requires is that individual Congress members go back to their districts. They have to understand the law themselves, and it was really interesting because I had a forum in Anaheim in August. I had several. I probably have done 18 in the last month or so. Mm-hmm. And I had a Congress member who was actually from the Ways and Means Committee with me, and we were talking about it, and at the end she looked at me and she goes, God, you know this bill a lot better than I do. And I said, well, you know, I really studied this thing before I decided to say yes to it. And for my area, for Anaheim, Santa Ana, Garden Grove, and Fullerton, this thing is going to be great for the people because we are either underinsured or not insured to a large extent. And so this will make it affordable, and more importantly, we will get health care direct access close to where we live in our neighborhoods, not, you know, where you have to get in the car and drive 10 miles.
Right, right. Congresswoman, let's talk about, obviously, you know, issue number one, the economy and jobs. I know that you went on record as saying you applaud President Obama's decision to appoint Elizabeth Warren to her new position. You know, and this is one of those things where, obviously, I feel like the president always gets it from both sides, and I think this is a great appointment, and I'm glad that she's going to be able to affect policy immediately than having to go through this Senate, I don't even know what you want to call it, obstacle course, as usual. Yeah.
Well, confirmation process. But the problem is that the Republicans decided at the beginning of this year, in January, everything was going to be no. No, 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 no. So even if the president would put up a qualified person like Elizabeth, they're going to say no, 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 just like they did on no on bringing up the military bill the other day. I mean, this is the first time I have seen them, you know, even say against military, no, we're not going to, you know, give pay raises to the military forces, et cetera, because they are about no. They believe if they can just say no enough all the way, even to the extent they're talking about closing down government before the election, they are just no, no, no.
Right.
They believe that by doing that, that they will win these elections big, and then they can come back and they can, destruct what we put together, whether it's health care or regulatory reform, reining in all those companies that were doing financial contracts and things who weren't being regulated at all.
Right.
They stand for two things, and they said it the other day very clearly in Orange County when it was five Republicans and me at a forum. They all said if we just didn't have taxes and we just didn't have regulation, everybody would have a job. That's basically what they're trying to sell out there. And
yeah.
The answer is that's not true. Don't believe that. They are wrong.
Yep.
We've done
yep.
that under George Bush. That's mm-hmm. why Obama inherited this mess.
That's
and
right.
And that's what we're trying to clean up.
Yep. Congresswoman Sanchez, you know, obviously a lot has been said about energizing the Democratic base, which, you know, the enthusiasm gap and all of that. One of the things I think will help us is, are you as startled and befuddled by some of the Tea Party candidates that they're nominating on their side? Because if that doesn't nominate you or, you know, motivate you, I don't know what will.
Well, I mean, it used to be you ran because you were a good person, you were a person in good standing in your community, you paid your bills on time.
Yes.
You know, now it's like there are two types of candidates in the Republican Party. One are people who don't pay their bills, you know, say crazy things.
Right, but want to lecture the rest of us about fiscal conservatism, right?
Exactly. And then, yeah, and then there's the other ones who want to lecture us about fiscal conservatism. You know, sit there and say, oh, look at me, I'm a family man, I go to church and everything, and it turns out, well, no, that's not really true, you know? I mean, it's just, it's so sad the type of candidates are being put up on the Republican side. And so if Democrats and non-declared and independents don't realize, you know, what a bunch of bullpucky is coming from that, then
That's such a cute congressional way of sort of swearing. Congresswoman, do you, you know, one of the saddest spectacles I've seen lately, of course, is Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And, you know, isn't that sort of another example of, you know, how do you think that's going to affect voter turnout and all of that? Because one of the things that, you know, the president got heckled again, you know, at an AIDS and gay rights fundraiser. And I'm just like, have you seen the kind of homophobic candidates around the other side? I mean, do you understand what's going to happen if we put in a bunch of right-wingers?
Well, everybody has to make their own decision about, one, whether they'll vote, and two, who they'll vote for. If people who are for civil rights and gay rights, if they're for that, and they believe that by not showing up or by not voting, or by voting for the Republican or the Tea Party person or the independent, somehow that is going to forward a positive national discussion and policy with respect to the civil rights of gay people in this nation, you know, they're off the rocker.
But there you go again, Congresswoman, where you've got 75% of the American people, I think, Don't Ask, Don't Tell should be overturned. And, you know, there you have John McCain and his friends just having to, you know, to make a point like this. And how do you win when everything you're for appears to be so politically unpopular?
Well, that means that where you win is you win in elections. Where you win is you get out and you go door to door and you get your friends and you get the other 75%, the people who believe this. That when we poll, they say, yes, we're for that. You go out and you find them and you tell them, we have got to get to the polls and we have got to vote the people who care about these issues in.
Yep.
That's what, you know, that's why we have elections. We have elections. We can affect elections.
Yep, absolutely. Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for giving us our pep talk this morning. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Stephanie.
All
welcome
right.
back.
Thank you. There she goes.
Hooray.
Representative Loretta Sanchez. Oh, I forgot to pester her about whether she's coming to my party. Rebecca, pester her about whether she's coming to my birthday party.
I think she's going to be doing some legislating.
Whatever.
You know, they're back in D.C. now. They're not on vacation.
So?
Although she might be back here for campaigning. Who can say?
Rebecca, get her back on the phone so I can pester her about that.
Oh, jeez.
Hmm? Listen, she and her sister Linda, they can dance your shoes off, Jim. You don't. I don't know if you want the Sanchez's to show up.
Oh, are we going to have a salsa band there?
Jim. All right. I was talking to Congresswoman Sanchez about this poll. Okay, here's your assignments, everybody. It's go educate someone today about the health care bill. Let's do that.
Yeah, make sure you know what you're talking about first.
For instance,
death panels. Mm-hmm. They're going to make you eat sand.
Okay, well, that one's my fault. But
yeah.
My point is, you know who's ruining America today, Jim, or Chris? Diane Kelly.
And she's with?
You are, and we would know you from?
She's in the Associated Press article.
Oh.
She said, I'm insecure about a document that's as big as the health care bill and wonder if anyone understands exactly what's in it. Thank you, Fox News. I'm guessing that Diane watches a lot of Fox. She's a retiree from Marietta, Georgia, who says she's somewhat opposed to the law.
Somewhat.
Even though she doesn't really even know what's in
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Well, that's what I said. You know, there was no Fox News in the 1960s.
Exactly.
So Fox News is everywhere.
That's what they keep repeating. No one even knows what's in it. What's in it?
Educate
yourself, you
moron. The president won't tell us what's in it. He won't even show us his birth certificate. Why would he show us in the health care? Blah, blah, blah.
People were asked whether the CBO had ruled legislation would probably increase the government's debt or whether they found it would reduce the red ink. Correct answer,
say,
reduce the red ink, reduce the
people
deficit.
People say, what's a CBO?
Congressional Budget Office. 81% in the survey got the wrong answer, including majorities of both supporters and opponents. Even though Obama seldom misses a chance to remind audiences of the CBO's favorable report, overall 3 out of 10 say they favored the law, while 4 in 10 say they're opposed. 30% were neutral. So, being as it just kicks in today, we do have time to try and, reclaim the issue where the president yesterday...
Part of the Affordable Care Act that we can implement right now and will take effect tomorrow.
All right. And then he had, he had some people that were actually affected positively by this. So hopefully it'll illustrate it further. We will talk about all that as we continue. 45 minutes after the hour, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Oh, my. How ruthlessly absurd.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller.
Yep, it is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour, 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. Actress Joan Allen coming up, who did play Pat Nixon. What
she
movie
did.
Was that? I don't know Nixon, any other movie Nixon. Other than The Contender.
I think it was called Nixon.
Nixon. It was Oliver Stone's movie Nixon.
Yes. With Anthony Hopkins as Nixon.
So hard to recall that title. Okay.
You know Anthony Hopkins has lost 80 pounds?
I know. Did you see that?
No.
Apparently he's just a diet consisting entirely of Chianti and fresh...
Fava beans. Some fava beans.
Fava beans.
Actually, wouldn't have the liver, just the fava beans.
It's a power cleanse.
By the way, speaking of eating fava beans, have you heard that Bill Clinton may have gone vegan?
Yes.
Really now?
Yes. Yes.
I hear the same of Monica Lewinsky. Oh, okay, come on, don't. Come on.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
A lot of weight.
We were talking about the, health care reform, which kicks in today, and the president having to explain it again. He said, why would you want to repeal something that the Congressional Budget Office says is going to save us $1 trillion if you're serious about the deficit? It doesn't make sense. I mean, it makes sense in terms of politics and polls. It doesn't make sense in terms of making people's lives better. He had a cancer patient with him at an event. Gail O'Brien was her name.
I was scared to death. More, not as much, I've got cancer. What am I going to do? It was, how am I going to pay for these outrageous bills that are going to come our way?
Would you like to know some fun facts about what's actually in the health care bill?
Sure.
Just to combat the,
lies.
No one knows what's in it! It's too big! Your step battle! Crowd. What are some of the new benefits? Sometimes they do a handy-dandy primer. The AP Medical gives you little fun facts. One question. What are some of the new benefits? Well, answer. Pre-preventative care, for one. Some people will no longer have to pay co-pays, co-insurance, or meet their deductibles for preventative care that's backed up by the best scientific evidence. That includes flu vaccines, mammograms, and even diet counseling for adults at risk of chronic disease.
But that's socialism. Communazi socialism.
Question.
Caledociousness.
What other changes start today? September 23rd. Answer, if you go to an emergency room outside your plan's network, you won't get charged extra. Patients will be able to designate a pediatrician or OBGYN as their primary care doctor, avoiding the need for referrals that are required by some
OBGYN! Plans. French gay abortions! They're going to force you to have...
That would French be the gay French abortions. Gay abortion clause that's in there. Question, I've heard lifetime limits are being eliminated. What does that mean?
Death battles! That better kill Grandma!
Jim, you're muddying the waters here.
Answer... Millions of Americans. No, it's good. We're illustrating how to combat
okay.
those
stupidity.
Morons.
All right.
Millions of Americans have insurance that set a cap on what their insurance will pay to cover their medical costs over a lifetime. The caps have left very sick patients with medical bills topping them $1 or $2 million high and dry. These lifetime limits will be eliminated for plans issued or renewed on or after September 23rd. Question, what about annual limits? Answer, plans issued or renewed on or after September 23rd can't have annual limits lower than $750,000. Annual limits will be limited entirely by 2014. Question, any changes that affect parents? Why, yes, Jim. Thank you for asking. Insurers can no longer deny coverage to children with pre-existing conditions. Also, parents can keep their adult children on their health plans till they're 26.
Yeah, but that means that, it's bad in some way. It's Muslim, kind of.
Are there any other consumer protections? Why, yes, Jim, there are. The law bars insurers from canceling policies retroactively when a person gets very sick and runs up high bills. Insurers will be able to rescind policies in cases of fraud or intentional misrepresentation, but they can't cut you off when you need coverage most for a capricious reason.
Yeah, but where's the birth certificate?
Question, are these changes likely to raise health insurance premiums? Answer, the Obama administration says the new benefits will raise premiums by no more than 1% to 2%.
Ha-ha! Gotcha!
Representative John Chaddick, Republican of Arizona, speaking for the crowd.
They didn't really mean it when they said it would bring down costs. Mm-hmm. In point of fact, costs are going up. And I don't think it's any surprise Democrats aren't running on this bill.
Yes. Once again, pay attention. The deficit will go down.
Yep.
It's just starting today. Representative Phil Gingrey, Republican of California.
We're not running away from it. We're talking to the American people, and they're saying to us loud and clear, this is no picnic, Mr. President. This is no picnic.
They're saying to us loud and clear,
as our constituents are saying to us, Mr. President, dur. How do you answer that? Well, I have no answer for that. I don't know what to say about that.
I don't know what to say. I tried to explain it in clear, concise English.
Here's some good news.
Still.
Polling. A modest shift in public polling toward Democrats is giving some Democratic leaders hope that talk of a wave election has been overstated, which we've been saying.
Yeah,
And the public is at least to some degree swinging back to the president and his party. Listen, we're not that crazy. What is Christine O'Donnell is down, 15 points? I mean, people are not that stupid. Both President Obama's job approval ratings and the generic ballot figures have edged toward parity over the last month. There have been a slew of polls in the last few days showing substantial movement toward Democrats and away from the Republicans, said the polling director. He said no one should be surprised. The underlining favorability of the Republican Party is still far below that of Democrats and Obama. The election has never been like 1994. Remember, everybody's been saying that. It's going to be 1994 like times 1,012 times pi.
Frankly.
This election has never been like 94, where at this point there have been both a fall of the Dems and a rise in the GOP. The memory of the disastrous GOP reign the last decade is still too fresh.
Their
leaders still too unreformed, their candidates far too wacky, and their ideas still too reckless for the current GOP to have fully taken advantage of the Democratic underperformance in this past cycle. So, we'll see. I brought this up with Congresswoman Sanchez, and you know me, happy, clappy liberal.
Mm-hmm.
These things like this annoy me. I am as chagrined as anybody at what happened with Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I think it was just in 2010 a disgusting display. But it was Republicans, largely, once again.
Mm-hmm.
So President Obama got heckled at a fundraiser last night by protesters pushing for more funding for AIDS and quicker action to allow gays to serve openly in the military. The president said some of those signs should be going up at other folks' events and folks should be hollering at the other folks' event because the choice in November could not be clearer. Addressing an activist pushing for more funding for Global AIDS Initiative, the president said, we heard your point, and as I said before, we increased AIDS funding. The people who will take over if we don't focus on the election, I promise you, will cut AIDS funding.
Yeah.
He said the last election was about the changing of the guard. This election is about guarding the change, to which I say, hear.
Nice turn of phrase.
Exactly. Put it in D. If you want to go forward, you put it in D. If you want to go back, you put it in R.
They're finally getting the psyops thing. But
yes.
It's more clever than the stuff that Luntz comes up with. But it sticks in your brain. So.
Exactly. All right. 58 minutes after the hour, we got Right Wing World. We have Oscar nominee Joan Allen. The show is, I mean, we're barely getting started. And we have Kos live in studio, Marcos Melissos, and also Harry Shearer live in studio. We've got a big show. Don't go away. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number, toll free from anywhere. StephanieMiller.com. Check it out. You can email us all there. Executive producer Chris LaVoie, voice deity Jim Ward, or me, Stephanie Miller, actress extraordinaire, Oscar nominee Joan Allen, coming up in just a few minutes. Marcos Melissos, Kos of Daily Kos, joins us live in studio at the bottom of the hour, and Harry Shearer live in studio all next hour. I'm so impressive.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Oh, and we have some breaking.
Right-wing hypocrites!
Oh, dear. In the unfortunate wake of the travesty that happened with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, who's this pastor? Chris, Georgia pastor.
Yes, he's pastor of a church that has 25,000 members.
Bishop Eddie Long.
Yes.
You fill in your own waxing the bishop joke or whatever.
Flogging
the something. He denies he forced young men to have sex with him. Oh, dear. Let me be clear. The charges against me and New Birth are false. He is, as you know, he is apparently not gay and has never been gay.
Let me be clear. I am not gay. I never have been gay.
Oh, dear. Okay. Sexy snapshots of Bishop Eddie Long sent to his young boyfriends. Is the headline. The situation looking worse and worse for Bishop Eddie Long. Jim, I posited to you, I don't know a lot of straight men that wear spandex, is all I'm saying. as he was accused by two of his young male congregants of inappropriate sexual behavior. Okay. ABC News reveals photos of the bishop in which he's posing in a muscle shirt and workout attire, taking pictures of himself in his bathroom. ABC says these are among the photos young men were say they were sent to them by Long. Long, a married father of four, he's a family values.
Yeah, sure.
He's known as a fierce opponent of gay rights and,
of course,
same-sex marriage, which is icky. He led a march against marriage equality rights from the site of the Dr. Martin Luther King's grave 6 years ago.
How straight is that?
Really straight. Okay. So that's the... That's...
That's what you call on the down low.
Very, very down low. Okay, then. Let's...
Wow.
Look how straight I am! Look at it! Look at me! Look how straight! And look at my spandex!
I am marching!
Look at my muscles!
I am marching! And that couldn't be straighter. I'm marching against gay rights in the straightest way possible. Check out this picture of me. Angels the centerfold. Okay, let's dive into the right-wing world, shall
Angel
we, kids?
In the centerfold.
Yes, whatever.
Yeah, you keep getting that wrong.
Okay.
Just saying.
Okay. Glenn back on the tee with the teabaggers already.
The Tea Party. I you know what? I think it's really... the traditional Democrat, like my grandfather, and the traditional Republican, not the progressives, but just the regular person that grew up in America, loving the Constitution and everything else.
If he was a traditional Democrat, he probably was a racist.
Yeah.
Before, you know,
and progressives really love the Constitution, all parts of the Constitution, including the First and 14th Amendments.
Including that yummy 14th
one. He's talking
one.
About 19th century Democrats who were still, yeah.
Yes. Okay, Hannity, this is a delightful edition of Republicans eating their own.
Let's start with the sore loser problem. Mike Castle, you just heard from Christine O'Donnell, still has not endorsed her. He promised at the state convention he would. Lisa Murkowski, sore loser. Charlie Crist, sore loser. Why aren't more Republicans critical, these people doing this?
Because they're going to win.
Right. Oh, a T and then a he.
Well, Mike Castle's out. But, you know, that's my point.
Yes, exactly. Well, in any case, they're going to make the race implode for the Republican,
yeah, that's
most
assuming
likely.
Assuming people know how to spell Murkowski. Yes.
Hannity was upset that Castle hasn't endorsed O'Donnell yet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dork.
Well, and what is she lacking as a candidate? Hmm?
Sore losers.
Who in their right mind would endorse that?
Mm.
Well, yeah, I used all the campaign money
I'm
to
thinking
buy
there,
lipstick.
But... I heard Melanie Sloan again this morning. I think there is a better chance that she will be in prison rather than the Senate. That's pretty much the most blatant misuse of campaign funds that I've ever heard of. It is not your personal piggy bank. I mean, it is hilarious that they're running as fiscal conservatives.
And they're trying to get rid of
against
Charlie
entitlement
Wrangle?
Programs. Yeah, exactly. All right, Brian Kilmeade, oh, God, must we? We just all get stupider every time we must listen. Oh.
It's just amazing, because the Democrats don't want the upper class to have those who make over $250,000 to have a break. Just like the Democrats on the extreme left don't want this war to continue in Afghanistan. If the president's going to do what's best for the country, he's going to do what's best for his party.
Okay, so giving tax cuts to the wealthiest people in America is what's best for the country?
Apparently.
We tried that.
Yeah.
And look what happened.
That gives us massive deficits.
In Afghanistan forever is good for the country?
Why
wow, Brian
is this
Jimmy
little
is
fart
stupid.
Joke show the only place...
I'm guessing it doesn't have kids in Afghanistan getting shot at.
Yeah. Why is this the only place that real journalism is going on? I ask you. Why? I don't...
I weep
it's
for
like
America.
Jim just said, why don't people ever... Normal journalists confront these people and do these talking points and say, we tried that. We everybody is getting those tax breaks now, and the economy is where it is. So how do you think continuing this is going to make things better? Okay. Mark Davis in for the drug-addled gas bag, Rush Limbaugh?
Yes. Mm-hmm. America, as in our system of laws, we no longer punish people for being Hispanic or being black or being any of those things. Mm. The country as a... as an entity, has purged itself of this. In fact, the only group of people that that America systemically gladly discriminates against now is white people through affirmative action, stuff like that.
Yes.
That's discriminating against.
And he went on to give what examples of that? Of why we
have affirmative action, of course.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank God Rush Limbaugh's back. Okay.
Folks, this isn't beanbag. We really are faced here with dire consequences. We've got enemies around the world who hate our guts and want to wipe us out. He doesn't care. And now we compound that or add to it with internal enemies, which for the first time pose a significant threat because they have power in our own government.
What? What is he talking about?
He's clearly down to his last Foxy
columnists.
He's, because the enemy... Well, there's a Kenyan socialist destroying us from within.
I have a list of 200 communists in the government. No, I'm not going to show it to you. You just have to trust me.
Okay, O'Reilly on the president.
You may remember about this time last year, the White House declared war on Fox News, saying that we were irresponsible in our reporting and biased against the administration.
Yes.
I write about that extensively in my new book, Pinheads and Patriots, because it actually helped us. Our ratings went up and the credibility of the administration went down. After a few weeks of that nonsense, a truce was declared and business went on as usual.
Okay. What? Yeah. All right.
They're paranoid over there at Fox News, aren't they? They're extraordinarily paranoid.
It's a war.
By the way,
coming to get us.
I don't think even Fox News considered having candidates quite as clunky as Sharon Engel, who blatantly says, I go on Fox News to raise money.
Yeah.
How many times do you think she gets memos from Roger Ailes? Stop saying it out loud!
It's nay.
Skittish around reporters at her own press conferences, Engel often runs to Fox News, the safe haven of conservative candidates in need of softball questions or nationwide fundraising appeals. Engel told Fox News as much when she instructed anchor Carl Cameron on his role as a PR agent. We need to have the press be our friends, she said, because when I get on a show and I say send money to SharonEngel.com so that your listeners, and she doesn't even know they're not listeners, they're viewers, but whatever, will know where to go if they want to support me. According to Engel, Fox News pundits and friendly press, like Rush Limbaugh, help her rake in the campaign cash, and she went on to note how very helpful Fox News has been in her fundraising.
Yeah. So basically, interviews on Fox News are an infomercial, not a journalistic endeavor. Gotcha. Okay.
That's the part. How much do you want to...
They're
going to
love
the
slap chop.
I bet Roger Ailes...
They're going to love my nuts.
You're going to love my nuts. My nuts could run Congress all by themselves.
can I go out on a limb here and say that I think Roger Ailes had a go-to-meeting with Sarah Palin and, what do you call it, Sharon Angle. It's okay. Dopey McDopersons, let's review. Don't say you speak through Fox News. Don't say you raise money through Fox News. Yes, it's true. Just don't say it out loud. Idiots. Oh.
I meant Vince, by the way.
Slapchop. You meant Vince from Slapchop?
I had an audition for something he was directing.
I bet it's
didn't
like
get
a,
it,
it's
but
like
it made a, him laugh. So
it's like a Dr. Evil you know, monologue when he's talking to either Sharon Angle or Sarah Palin. All right. 15 minutes after the hour, we're going to break early because we have Oscar nominee Joan Allen coming right up on the Stephanie Miller Show.
And don't let those screeches bother me.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. Stephanie Miller. Well, shake it up, baby, now. Shake it up, baby. Twist and shout. Twist and shout. Come on, baby, now. Come on, baby. Come on and work it on out. Work it on out.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Do what I do. Protect your irreplaceable computer files with Carbonite Online Backup. Don't wait. Start backing up your computer with Carbonite today. Go to Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Stephanie for my special offer, a 15-day free trial plus 2 months free with any subscription. Carbonite.com, offer code Stephanie. Wow, we really hit the jackpot today. Apparently, Jim, many, many publicists mistook us for another show. And we were able to book people that are way... way too
up
fancy
up
for
our
Yes, we've already had Philip Seymour Hoffman on this morning, and now Oscar nominee Joan Allen joins us. Good morning, Joan.
Wow.
Hey.
You must have no idea what show you're on because you are way, way too too fancy for us.
You had Philip Seymour Hoffman. I love him.
I know.
He's unbelievable.
Well, so are you. You here's something that you don't know about me. I am obsessed with the movie Contender. You were so fabulous in that movie. I just don't know what to say.
Well, thank you.
One of my favorite lines ever, because we talk about politics all the time, is you said, I'm not going to answer that question because it makes it all right that you asked it. It just... But it was a great, you know, commentary on just politics in general today, wasn't it, that film?
Yeah. You know, I haven't seen it for many, many years because I don't watch things, you know, after I've been in them.
Right.
I watch them initially for, you know, once they've been made, but then after that I don't really see them. But I, you know, I've run into people who watch that movie and go, it's still so relevant.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You well, let me just remind you, you rocked in it. You were fabulous, and you were the vice presidential candidate, just to update you.
yes, remind me.
And also you played Pat Nixon. All right, let's review what you're
Exactly. Oh. Yeah.
So, I got to tell you, this new movie you're doing contains two things I love. One is Joan Allen, and two, of course, is about dogs.
Yes.
It is now. You're starring with Richard Gere in a new Hallmark Channel movie, Hachi, A Dog's Tale.
Yes.
I was reading about this last night and I started weeping. tell us about the movie.
Well, the story is like incredible. It's based on a true story that happened in Japan in the 1930s, and it's our American version of the same story. There was an Akita dog, and this family, this professor. Got the puppy, and of course the wife was like, no more dogs, but of course the dog stays and bonds very, very deeply with the master, and he waits every day loyally at the train station promptly at 5 o'clock. He knows when his master's train comes in from work, and one day the master doesn't come home, and he's had a heart attack, and the dog continues for the next 10 years to wait loyally every day at 5 o'clock at the train station.
Mm. And until the dog finally dies as well, correct?
Yes.
And this is a, you know, legend in Japan. I mean, there was a statue of this dog at that train station because
Yes, it's a legendary story in Japan. And actually, you know, more Americans when I told, you know, talked about it were aware of the story than I had thought. But anyway, it's right. Our version, you know, American version of the same story.
And I forgot. Yeah, actually, your movie contains three things I love: Joan Allen, dogs, and Jason Alexander, who is also in the film.
Yes, and Richard Gere. Too bad to have Richard Gere.
Yes, I love him as well. You know, it's so funny. I was in fact, I'm telling a friend about this on the phone last night, just to name drop that I was having Joan Allen on my show this morning, but number two, because she's also a dog lover, and she started crying just hearing the story. But, you know, I think Richard Gere was saying it's a visceral response for me from the beginning. When you have that kind of bond with an animal, it's in the realm of poetry. I started to weep like a baby. He was talking about when he just read it for the first time.
It's true. When they just told me, you know, before I even read the script, when my, you know, agent sort of told me the premise of the story, I was like, oh, my God. Get the Kleenex right now.
Right. And I know that Richard Gere talked about the crew would spend 12 hours filming the dog and then maybe 10 minutes shooting his segments.
Well, you know, Akitas are, you know, very particular breed. It was really fascinating watching the trainers work with them because they're not people-pleasing dogs very much.
Right.
They really could care, you know, and so, you know, to train a dog that has that sort of, you know, is bred that way and has that sort of temperament is challenging. You know, it's easier, they said, to train dogs who like to please, you know, a human being. And so it was kind of more of a challenge for these trainers.
Well, you know, and it's interesting, just the whole story of this movie, because, you know, you would think this, of course, would be a feature film. But, you know, as you know, I guess Richard Gere talked about it, just not every film takes the same path. And, thank God we're seeing it at all, because it just sounds amazing.
Yeah, you know, he's really right, you know, particularly I think in this day and age, you know, with all the internet things and DVDs and DVRing and, you know, la la la, you know, it's the climate has changed a lot for the path that a film can take, and actually it's kind of great to have all these different venues available, so each one is unique.
Now, as great an actress as you are, how did you find the will to play someone that does not want a dog? What was that like? I know you played some icy characters before, but
well, I have to say, my daughter for many years was like, Mom, let's get a dog. Mom, let's get a dog. I live in New York City, and I travel a lot for work, and I was like, no, can't do it. And then, you know, one day, you know, kind of a window opened, and, you know, of scheduling, and I think a window opened in my mind and my heart, and I was like, okay, let's try it. And so, of course, now I have this little Boston Terrier, and, you know, my daughter loves the dog, but I am insane over the dog.
Yeah, that's the way it always plays out.
Yeah, it does. I can't imagine, you know, life without this dog and how I did it before.
Yeah.
You know, it just brings so much to your life, and it's just, you know, I just love it.
Well, I am a single childless loser, and I have to tell you, when people say to me, oh, they're like your children, I have two Great Pyrenees, I'm like, no, they're not like my children. They are my children.
They are.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. I think that's what's so touching about the film is it is a bond that you can't really explain. You just know it if you've experienced it, right?
I know it. It's true. I think there's this animated film out now called My Dog Tulip.
Oh.
Which is based on, I've only seen the trailer for it, and it's based on, I think, maybe a real event that happened with this older British man. I don't know if he was a writer, but he was single his whole life. And later in his life, he adopts a dog. And I think the film is all about, you know, the incredible bond that this man, you know,
right,
very late in his life, always a single person, never thought he could, you know, feel that kind of affection, has with that dog.
Yep. Joan, you may not be aware of this, but you are a 3-time Oscar nominee and a 2-time Emmy nominee. Now, I look at your list of, you know, and some of them you forget. I mean, Face Off, Bourne Ultimatum, The Notebook, Ice Storm, Tucker. What a body of work. Do you, and of course, I, you know, The Contender is my personal favorite. What was the one you enjoyed working on the most?
Oh boy, each one is kind of the favorite, you know, at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, like a your own little baby, you know, each one. I would have to say The Contender was really was very special, and Upside of Anger was really special too.
Oh, I love that. Love that movie.
A little more outrageous, you know, and you know, it was, I got to stretch, you know, myself a little bit, and play, you know, a little bit more on the comedic side, and so that one, that experience was really amazing.
I had totally forgotten that one. Loved you in that. And here's the one degree of Stephanie Miller separation. I used to do radio with Rod Lurie on my old radio station,
yes,
who directed The Contender, starring Joan Allen. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Oh my God.
And Kevin Bacon Kevin Bacon's dog walker was my dog walker in New York. So there's something there too. But
there is.
Joan Allen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much. Good luck with the movie.
Oh, thank you so much, Stephanie.
All right. Thank you. There she goes, Joan Allen.
Hooray.
Check it out.
She's awesome. I love her.
29 minutes after Upside of Anger. Oh, 29 minutes after the hour, right back on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller.
Yeah, she's kind of weird that way.
Yeah, she's kind of weird a bunch of ways.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 34 minutes after the hour. It is just a celebrity parade. Something is... You know what? Rebecca is lying again about what show she's calling from, isn't she?
Yeah.
All right. Could I have my cheap butter commercial music? Because not only do we have a fancy guest, but live in studio, Marcos Melitzos. He's Coast, for God's sakes, of Daily Coast. Good morning, Marcos.
Good morning. I walked in the studio and I got a standing ovation. I've never had that much.
You did.
A reaction. Yay.
And the crowd went wild.
That was pretty fantastic.
And you dove into the mosh pits.
Freebird!
No, when you wrote me and said, I was like, oh, I'm being pranked. Is this really you? I was like, yes, I'd love to have you on. You have a new book, of course, that everybody's talking about, The American Taliban, How War, Sex, Sin, and Power Bind? That was a misprint.
What?
Power Jihadists and the Radical Right. We get the idea. So tell us about the book and about the reaction you've been getting.
Yeah, I spent the last 9 years as a progressive hearing from conservatives about how I want the terrorists to win because I oppose things like torture and indefinite rendition and all these horrible things that we've done in the name of national security. So I want the terrorists to win. And of course, it's always been ludicrous because if you look at the facts, fact is that when you're talking about values, the conservative, modern conservative movement and these Islamic jihadists basically share the same values. I mean, from their militarism and sort of fetishization of weaponry and guns, to their efforts to keep women from having an equal role in society, to their bizarre hang-ups about sex and their hatred of science, and their efforts to control the culture. I mean, they truly are regressive, reactionary, and based on fear of the other. So why would I want the terrorists to win when the same reason I do not like Islamic jihadists is the same reason I do not like American conservatives?
Right. Well, you know, and obviously the headline I'm reading here, well, look at this. Many liberals reject Marcos Melitzos' anti-conservative book. You've been taking some fire from both sides because people are like, oh, well, that's too much. That's too over the top, right?
Yeah, there's a sense of, the Taliban, they're a bunch of monsters. And Americans can't be monsters like that, right? There's a little bit of American exceptionalism. And to me, it's ludicrous on its face because you don't have to go that far back in American history to see these kinds of abuses. You just have to go down to the Jim Crow South,
right,
and the legacy of lynchings.
Right.
They had picnics,
right,
at these lynchings.
Right.
And so you can't sit there and say, well, Americans would never do this. Now, it's true. One of the arguments I've gotten is that Ann Coulter hasn't beheaded anybody. And I'm willing to grant that, yes,
do
so
we know
Ann
that
Coulter,
for sure?
I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. But that's the bar we've set now, that you're not an extremist until you behead somebody.
you're talking about philosophy, and you make a good point. America's primary international enemy, Islamic radicalism, insists on a government by theocracy, curtails civil liberties, embraces torture, represses women, wants to eradicate homosexuals from society, insists on the use of force over diplomacy, remind you of a certain American political party.
But apart from that, what have the Romans ever done for us?
Yeah, and you know, they're rushing out to defend these conservatives because conservatives just don't have any way to defend themselves. But it really speaks to a naivety. I mean, right now there's a 6-month backlog on ammunition in this country.
Right.
People trying to buy bullets cannot buy bullets because they've been hoarding these guns. These aren't people who are hoarding guns and ammo because they want to participate in a peaceful democratic process.
Well, you've got candidates like Sharon Engel saying Second Amendment remedies.
Right, and you have, when you have, you know, key top-level Republicans saying that sort of thing, you have a movement that really is rejects democracy as a tool.
Yeah.
And they're willing to resort to violence, and they haven't yet. They started to resort to violence after Obama was elected, because having an African American with a middle name Hussein sort of blew their minds.
Yeah.
But the Tea Party movement sort of allowed them to channel their energies into something a little more healthy. Well, than shooting people.
Right, but Marcos, I mean, there have been exactly what the Homeland Security Department report talked about. There have been a huge increase in right-wing violence.
No, and there has
they
been.
All screamed about it, and it is true. It is quantitatively, provably true that there have been a lot of violence that has been, I think, fomented by a lot of these right-wing characters.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, when that report came out, the American conservatives, instead of distancing themselves from those fringe, they basically embraced them, and they were wearing T-shirts that said, I'm a right-wing extremist. So they've become one and the same. And what I'm afraid is going to happen, and what I think we need to be very careful of, is when, if Republicans do not take control of Congress this year, if Obama wins re-election in 2012, and I think both are fairly good bets, these people are going to decide that the Democratic system isn't good enough. They're convinced that Acorn...
Yeah, it's not working because they're losing.
Right. They're convinced that Acorn stole the 2008 election. Right? They live in a bubble that Fox News and Rush Limbaugh have created for them. And so I think that's when they're more apt to resort to violence. And we can't sit there and sit around like everybody does saying, nobody could have predicted
that this would happen. Yeah, everybody
when
could.
The signs are all there.
Now, let's get to our liberals eating their own. The Daily Beast's Ben Crair says the book might just have easily been written by Rush Limbaugh or Ann Coulter. This is a liberal attempt at a conservative bestseller. Wow. Melitzis makes it his mission to create a movement on the left similar to one that Limbaugh and Coulter helped build on the right. If Democrats run the country for the next 50 years because Melitzis has taught them to fight fire with fire, then I guess I won't complain. I just wish reading American Taliban didn't make me feel like a member of the conservative book club. But isn't this the problem? Is Democrats never learn how to fight?
They don't want to fight fire with fire. There's nothing in the book that's false. I mean, it's all true.
Right.
Now, you can make the argument.
But it's impolite, Marcos.
But that's the thing. It's you know, heavens, David Broder's not going to like it. And he's not going to invite me to the next cocktail party circle unless I call out the extremists on both sides, because we're going to talk about false equivalency and everybody does the same thing.
It's what Jim, we always joke about that they do on CNN. You know, that like they have to present everything like there's two sides, even if the Republican side is a complete lie. You know, it's like, then you got Wolf Blitzer.
You claim that lynching is a bad thing, and both sides have equal points, but we'll have to leave it there.
We have to leave it there! And it's always before the liberal gets to talk. It's like, it's on the right-wing lie.
Ask
he goes,
me a question.
Oh, we're out of time.
But I didn't get to...
let's see. I'm just reading more and more. I love the fact that, because this is exactly the point of a great book, is you got everybody talking.
Well, you know, one of the arguments that I got recently is like, you're just trying to get a rise out of people. Why did you name it the American Taliban? Why didn't you refer to another right-wing extremist movement? Because the American Taliban, it's an American movement. It's not based on Islam. I said, nobody said it's based on Islam. That's the most ridiculous counter-argument. And the reason I compared them to the Taliban is because they've been telling me for 9 years that I want the terrorists to win. Had they been telling me that they want a right-wing Hasidic Jew movement to win, you know, then maybe I would have... That would have been the focus of the book. But the fact is that they are accusing me...
Then it would have been American Mossad.
Yeah, of making common cause with Islamic fundamentalists when, again, they share those same values. I mean, the same reason that progressive ideology.
You cite some quotes. Our culture is superior. Our culture is superior because our religion is. Sounds like an Islamic extremist, right? Wrong. Those words were uttered by one of America's most well-known media figures, Pat Buchanan, just when one of the many proselytizers of conservative intolerance gaining a toehold in our culture. Which brings us to the really good MSNBC gossip. Now, but you know, you talk about even networks, like, you know, everybody likes to say MSNBC is a liberal network, or they're not a liberal network in the sense that Fox News is a Republican network, are they? You know, we have not only Obama bashers, but Republicans on MSNBC.
Yeah, you have 3 hours of primetime liberal programming, and then you have 3 hours of morning conservative programming, because you always got to balance it out. And somehow, because Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann are on there, suddenly it's become the liberal network. But, you know, this is a network that hired Mark Halperin, who's a well-known right-wing shill, to be their senior political analyst. They've given Pat Buchanan his own cotton green room, right, because the guy apparently lives there now. And So just having a few shows that are liberal doesn't make it a liberal network.
Those prison doc blocks, they're really liberal.
Really
far left.
Let's get to the good gossip. So you've been banned from MSNBC because you got in a Twitter war with Joe Scarborough?
Yes, I made Joe Scarborough cry on Twitter.
Because you brought up the dead intern, which apparently is not supposed to be. Again, you're just not said in polite company, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't accusing the guy of killing this
right.
staffer. I mean, but I don't know how many people know, but at the same time that Gary Condit was being harassed for supposedly murdering Chandra Levy, dead staffer showed up in Joe Scarborough's office
under
suspicious circumstances.
Yeah, in some circles would be considered a news story.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a difference because, you know, Joe Scarborough was a Republican, and that gave him a blanket immunity from any sort of any look at that. And Gary Condit was a Democrat, so now Gary Condit has been hounded from polite society for something he didn't do. And Joe Scarborough has a show on MSNBC, and he was on Twitter. He was whining about the Joe Sestak non-story. Remember this?
Yeah.
He was offered a job, and supposedly this was the most horrible thing that happened in the history of the world.
Right.
And he was complaining about media double standards. And I wrote saying, you know, considering Gary Condit and what happened with your office, you know, you're the last person to be talking about media double standards.
Right.
And then he freaked out, said I accused him of murder 4 or 5 times. People were asking him for links. Of course there were no links because I never did accuse him of murder, not even once. And then I was banned. And the president of MSNBC, Phil Griffin, told me that I was no longer welcome on the network until I apologized. It's like kindergarten.
You're in the corner in the dunce cap, and now we don't know how this is all going to play out.
I'm hoping it resolves itself over time. I'm not going to apologize to Joe Scarborough. I mean, one, I didn't do what he said. He should apologize to me for accusing me of accusing him of murder. That's scandalous and terrible. And
who doesn't love a good Twitter war?
When they. Progressive gets banned from the so-called Progressive Network because he made a conservative cry on Twitter. I don't see MSNBC being particularly liberal.
God, this is better than Paris and Lindsay.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. All right.
No, it's not. No, it's a come on. Let's be honest.
Marcos Melitzos of Daily Coast. He is Coast of Daily Coast, for God's sakes, live in studio with us with his fabulous new book, American Taliban. We're going to talk about that and much more as we continue on The Stephanie Miller Show. Come on, it's brilliant.
It's The Stephanie Miller Show.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. 50 minutes after the hour. Harry Shearer joins us live in studio all next hour on The Big Show. Marcos Melitzos, author of the new book, American Taliban, of Daily Coast, one of our very favorite websites, right here in studio with us. Marcos, the new book, I love, you know, what you say makes good sense. It's just people, sometimes liberals don't like impoliteness. Like their Islamic cousins, the American Taliban bases their ideology on facts that validate their worldview, but have little to do with reality. Obama's illegitimate, born in Kenyan. Acorn stole the election, lie after lie, until each is firmly embedded as truth in the collective delusional Taliban mind. I mean, there are similarities, and what's wrong with pointing it out?
Yeah, like you said, it's impolite, and I think there's this notion that the Taliban they're inhuman, they're monsters, and no American could ever be that bad. I think it's obviously ludicrous, and a lot of it is just the function of their society. Their society allows them to get away with greater abuses in our society. We live under a constitutional framework that prohibits the worst abuses. That's the reason conservatives have been attacking and trying to undermine that legal framework, from attacking activist judges to going after religious freedoms and the First Amendment to anything having to do with habeas corpus to 14th Amendment and equal protection and so on.
Well, speaking of theocracy, that right there, it's like, oh yeah, we're founded on freedom of religion, but not these few blocks here and not that religion.
It's downright un-American. I mean, the way they've been freaking out about this Muslim community center at the Burlington Coat Factory, 2 blocks away from Ground Zero, is un-American. But you can't call them that. Because, of course, they embody what America is. They own the American flag.
Yeah.
And Born in the USA is their song, even though it's not really their song.
I was saying yesterday they act like Google Maps had been invented when they wrote the Constitution. They said freedom of religion, except not here in these blocks.
No, exactly.
What?
So it is. It's a very undemocratic. It's a very autocratic and theocratic and all these horrible cratics.
Yeah, a lot of cratics, exactly. Yeah. Now, you were saying your bread and butter, of course, is talking about elections, is polling and all of that stuff. You talk about the Tea Party, obviously, in the book, right?
Yes.
To me, that's the best way to close the enthusiasm gap, is they just keep nominating crazier and crazier people. I mean, just when you think no one's crazier than Sharon Angle, here comes Christine O'Donnell, right?
Yeah, voters are angry with the Democrats, and they're gonna punish them at the polls for not delivering fully on what they promised. But had the Republicans gotten the candidates they wanted across the board, they'd be in really good shape to take the Senate right now and probably be a fairly solid bet to take the House. They'd given us a lifeline. I mean, it's Tea Party people. They'd given a lot of energy to the GOP,
yes,
which is actually helping them. But on the other hand, they've given them the Christine O'Donnells and Sharon Angles that have suddenly created competitive seats. I mean, the first race that the Republican Party put money into in the Senate was the Kentucky Senate race because they have Rand Paul.
Right.
Kentucky. This is a southern race in a very red state at the federal level. Should not be competitive. Had the Republican Party gotten the candidate they wanted, you know, he'd be winning by 40 points.
Right.
Instead, they nominate Rand Paul. The race is competitive. They have to spend money there. That's money they can't spend in California or Washington.
I've said this from day one, this is such an overblown media story, and I think it's nothing but good news for Democrats, the Tea Party. I mean, in race after race, I just don't think this is going to go well for them in November. Howard Dean said the other night he thinks we keep the House and the Senate. You don't...
I'm more optimistic right now about the House. The polling's clear. Really moving in our direction. If you noted, I mean, one way to tell how things are going is see who's releasing their internal polling. Over the spring and summer, it was all the Republicans releasing internal polling. Democrats were nowhere to be found. Suddenly, the last couple of weeks, it's Democrats that are dumping poll after internal poll. Republicans are really quiet. Now they're releasing this contract on America, this hit on America, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, that just came out today. What's in that? What brand new ideas are in that?
I'm sure it's... tax cuts.
Yeah.
The brand new idea, repealing the health reform act.
Uh-huh.
And they're only doing that because I think the polls are moving away from them and they're trying to change the narrative of the race. So things are moving back in our direction. The Senate's still a little scary. I wouldn't rest. We can't rest because, I like to talk about my book and I say, you got to read the chapter on sex because it's really funny. These people are crazy. But it's easier to laugh at them when they're not in power.
Right. Well, exactly. You brought up during the break, and somebody had written me about my future husband, Senator Feingold, who is in a tough race in Wisconsin. And that's how you know it's a weird year. In my opinion, two of our finest senators, Barbara Boxer and Russ Feingold, can be in tough races. And in this case out here, against someone that was like named one of the worst CEOs ever. Who got fired, and that's the record she's running on.
Yeah, people are angry at Democrats, a lot of progressives, and there's a lot of good reasons. I'm not going to sit there and try to sugarcoat it. But we're angry at Democrats because we've been undermined by a Senate that is undemocratic and broken and needs to be reformed. The filibuster needs to be reformed. And you have people like Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln who are corporatist owned and have undermined the caucus. We cannot risk people like Feingold and Boxer because we're angry at Ben Nelson and Blanche Lincoln, because then instead of trying to make things better, we're actually making worse. And if we lose a voice like Feingold in the Senate, we're going to be taking several steps back, and we can't allow that to happen.
Yeah. No, I listen. Get out and help my future husband, Russ Feingold, in Wisconsin. I mean,
you're taller than him, right? So you couldn't wear heels unless you... tower over.
Listen,
him.
I can overlook certain
kind of
things.
Like a Nicole Kidman, Tom Cruise sort of thing.
Like he could overlook the fact that I'm that way.
Yeah.
All right. So what else do you make? So the latest news, Axelrod leaving the White House, probably Rahm Emanuel. The good news is Axelrod expected to reassume his role as campaign manager in 2012 for Obama, which he did a pretty good job last time. How do you think all that's going to affect things?
I don't know. I look at the broader picture when you're looking at 2012 presidential. I mean, I'm more excited about who the Republicans are going to nominate because Ronald Reagan nowadays. I have a section in the book I talk about Ronald Reagan. If he was alive today and he was trying to get elected, where he voted for amnesty, he pushed amnesty.
Oh, he'd be teabagged right out of the party. Yeah.
He opposed an anti-gay initiative and he negotiated with terrorists. He negotiated with Gorbachev. Yeah. the evil empire. He wouldn't last 2 seconds. So I cannot wait to see who they're going to try to nominate, because nobody's going to meet the purity test.
Bill Clinton said this the other day, that they consider George Bush a liberal. I mean, the Tea Party, I mean, they have pushed this party so far to the right. I mean, I thought one of the most saddest spectacles I've seen is here's this dinosaur, John McCain, this nasty bag of ass on the floor of the Senate.
I like that.
Don't ask, don't tell. 75% of the American people, are for the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And here they are just fighting the same social. Oh, by the way, the social issues made it into the Republican thing today, right?
Yep.
The gay bashing and the anti-choice and the whatever.
I mean, it is in there.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But, I mean, they've still got these dinosaur social conservatives, gnawing at them. Now they have the Tea Party gnawing on the other side.
The Tea Party really, to me, I'm fascinated by it, because I actually think it is truly a grassroots. If people try to minimize it, say it's asterisk, right. They're really grassroots. They've always been there, but they've always been in the shadows. So I know Karl Rove loves these people, originally loved them, because he was able to manipulate them. But he didn't expect them to actually win primary elections, right? Because the way they communicated with his base is they use what's called dog whistle politics, right? They use code words.
Yep.
But suddenly you have people like Rand Paul and Christine O'Donnell who don't know how to use code words. They do not want to use code words. They're out of the closet, so to speak. And they're being proud about what they stand for. And suddenly you have Karl Rove freaking out because, you're not supposed to say that out loud. And a perfect example is this guy who's running against Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, where he ran an ad, this Republican just ran an ad saying, my opponent's going to accuse me of wanting to kill Social Security. So let me tell you straight to your face, I do.
Oh, man. Arthur Ailes is going, Sarah Palin, don't speak through Fox News, you idiot.
Right.
Marcos Melitzos, the book is American Taliban. The website is dailycoast.com. What a pleasure. Thanks so much, Marcos.
Oh, anytime. Thank you so much.
There he goes. Get back on MSNBC. Let's start a campaign. 58 minutes after the hour, back with Harry Shearer next on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
This hour it is left. Stephanie Miller Show. 6 minutes after the hour. This hour brought to you by GoToMeeting, the best way to host an online meeting. My listeners can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days. Visit GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button. Type in the promo code Stephanie. Be sure to use the promo code Stephanie. StephanieMiller.com is the website. Today's show is, and you thought I couldn't be more impressed with myself. It's just been a parade of Oscar and Emmy winners. And now here he comes. Harry Shearer is in the house. The Emmy-winning Harry Shearer.
No. Just nominee.
All right.
Never an Emmy, baby.
Close enough.
I'm going to tell you how I got my Emmy.
How's that?
I stole it. True story.
From who?
From the Emmy people. Well, where do you go to get the Emmys?
I thought you meant a friend that was...
No.
Okay. Well, you're going to win one. You've been nominated,
not.
Please.
No, once.
You are brilliant.
Thank you.
Now, Harry...
Emmy Schmemmy is what I say.
The most important thing we already took care of off air, and that is that Michael McKean and you are going to come to my birthday party, and so we will have two-thirds of a Spinal Tap reunion.
Talk
at
about
my birthday
a reunion
party.
Show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Think about what song you're going to sing for karaoke. Now,
I'm going to sing the song that was that loop that you played in the hold time.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah.
What was that? Funky Cole Medina?
Yes, we were torturing Harry. We were softening him up for the interview so he will tell us anything.
It was actually Tone Loc's other hit, Wild Thing.
Wild Thing.
Yes.
That's right. I was talking it up a little bit, upscale a little bit with Funky Cole Medina.
Harry Shearer, you have your own fabulous radio show. Mm-hmm. You are star of stage, screen, whatever. And now, a documentary. It's a feature-length documentary marking the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Don't know if a lot of people know that you live pretty much half and half, New Orleans and L.A., right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, tell us about the film and what was the inspiration for it, and what is it about?
Well, it's about the actual story of what happened, why New Orleans flooded, and whether it can happen again. Mm-hmm. Most people put the words Hurricane Katrina on that story, even though as one of the
two investigators, one of the leaders of the two investigations that looked into this matter, says unequivocally this was a man-made catastrophe, the greatest man-made engineering catastrophe since Chernobyl. Yeah. Now, Chernobyl's the big leagues, baby. You'd want to go AAA if they put you in in that league.
Well, I mean, I think you're absolutely right, is that you know, the levee failures and all of that, the Army Corps of Engineers and all of that is one of the big stories that I think was not covered enough. You know, the fact that you had Mary Landrieu on the Senate floor, what, like 42 times screaming that she needed more money for the levees.
Well, you know, the problem, and I have to say, because everybody knows that I'm a comedy person, I don't know this stuff. None of this is my opinion. I went to the experts, the people who led these two independent investigations, one centered at UC Berkeley and the other at LSU. And over a year, they assembled teams and went to work looking at this thing because they just started to disbelieve the official explanations. And so the film basically follows them through the course of the beginning of their doubts, through the course of their investigation and the announcement of their conclusions. And this system, and it's the word system deserves to be put in quotes, the Army Corps itself in its own brief mea culpa called it a system in name only, this system was pretty much doomed from the start. It's not as if any expenditure of money in 2004 could really have remedied this. This was a series of problems that was baked in over 4.5 decades under administrations of both political parties. It started out when the Army Corps defined the job down. The Congress had said in 1965, after Hurricane Betsy hit New Orleans, devise a system, build a system to protect New Orleans against the maximum probable hurricane. That was the language Congress used. The Army Corps interpreted that language to mean something they called a standard project hurricane, which was the model against which they were going to design this system. And from that model, they threw out every extreme, severe, then recent hurricane as statistically improbable.
Mm-hmm.
So they under-designed it from the start.
Well, you know, I remember just seeing, I don't know if you saw, you know, around when Katrina happened, you'd see, you know, these pictures on the Internet of what our levees look like and then what other
the
systems
Dutch
around the world
and the British,
look like. And you think, how does this happen in America?
Well, the answer is the Army Corps of Engineers. Mm-hmm. And so we follow those two investigators, and we follow a whistleblower from Los Angeles who was in the Army Corps of Engineers, who went down to New Orleans to supervise the testing and the installation of the pumps that are at the heart of the new improved system that the Army Corps has been building since the flood.
Mm-hmm.
They got $14 billion to do a new improved system. She says the pumps could never pass their tests, even when the testing standards were reduced, even when they were allowed to swap out parts, even when every effort was made. They never passed their tests, and they were installed anyway, and she says they cannot work during a hurricane situation. They will blow.
You know, that was the question I was just going to get to. I was afraid of the answer, and there it is. You know, is it better? Is it fixed? I mean, you look at Ground Zero. Look at this stupid fight we're having over Ground Zero, and you look at the fact that this is the United States of America, and there's still nothing there.
Yeah.
You know, and this is what, you know, I wonder about just in general the progress or lack thereof that's been made in the region since Katrina, because I hear from people that it's not great.
Well, you know, it depends on what you're talking about. The progress in terms of people coming back, rebuilding their homes despite all the obstacles put in their way by insurance companies and the state bureaucracy that was running the Road Home program has been remarkable. The city is 80 to 85% back. There are 120 or 130 more restaurants open than were open before the flood. With about three exceptions, every musician I know who lived in the city has come back, and the others are sort of making tentative plans to. The city, you know, at the beginning of this year, when they finally got rid of Ray Nagin and then the Saints won the Super Bowl, it almost felt like the place was levitating.
Mm-hmm.
But, on the other hand, there's still 100,000 of the evacuees absent. We don't know where they are. We don't know whether they're happy where they are or whether they want to come back. Nobody has those statistics. Nobody thought it was important to gather those statistics. So there's a big chunk of New Orleans that's missing, and we don't know whether they want to come back or not. They were given one-way tickets and dropped everywhere from Utah to Atlanta.
Is the Obama administration doing better, though? I mean, it's hard to imagine doing worse than the Bush administration regarding New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina. But what more needs to be done, and is it being done?
Well, I can tell you this. Everybody on the ground there says gives high marks to the new FEMA administrator for cutting red tape. A lot of federal money that had been in the pipeline for years is finally now beginning to flow. And that's a good thing.
Yes, but do they know Arabian horses as the last administration?
No. By the way, just to underline how goofy all of this is, you know what Mike Brown is doing now?
What?
He's a radio talk show host in Denver.
Yes, he is.
And at the time of the 5th anniversary in New Orleans, I was a guest on his show.
Really?
So from Stephanie Miller to Mike Brown and back, baby.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what bringing out a movie will do for you. But the answer to your, I will not draw conclusions. I'll just tell you two facts. In March of 2009, the Corps of Engineers announced that they were adopting for one part of this new improved system what they themselves called the technically not superior solution. And in June of last year, the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, which investigates and vets whistleblower complaints, because that whistleblower inside the Corps had gone through this agency, sent a letter to the chairman of the Armed Services Committees of the House and Senate and to the White House saying these allegations are true. If anything, they're understated about the pumps. And nothing has been done about either of those two facts since then.
So, I mean, essentially, Harry, is what you're saying that if another hurricane the size of Katrina hits, it's going to be the same result?
Nobody is predicting that 100%. Everybody is saying there are some very serious questions here.
Well, I mean, look at all the people saying, oh, well, you know, the technology is better for drilling. We know how to prevent these things now. It's called a blowout preventer.
Yeah.
You know,
Well, I think that the common thing in those two disasters was a remarkable amount of hubris on one side of the table and a remarkable amount of credulity on the other side of the table. Mm-hmm. I'll point to you just in the 5th anniversary coverage of the flood. CBS Evening News had a 2.5-minute piece on where basically I asked on my Twitter account afterwards, did the reporter at least poop out the press releases afterwards? Because it was just a 2.5-minute, you know, here's the Corps of Engineers, here's their great work, look at this, look at the big thing, look at all the money they're spending. Not a hint that there was any criticism, not a hint that there were qualified, eminently qualified engineers saying there are some questions to be asked about this. Not a hint that there was any of that.
Great title for the documentary, The Big Uneasy.
Thank you.
Of course, this is the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It's going to be showing, if you're here in L.A., at the Lemley Sunset 5 Theater in L.A., September 24th through the 30th. Great day. Isn't it a Wolfgang Puck that's there, Chris?
No, that closed down.
Oh, okay. Well, there's a good restaurant there. Go eat there. Go see Harry's
There's home a Wolfgang Schmuck there now.
Yeah, I think there's a Sushi Dan there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Sushi Dan is good.
Yeah. Mm.
I'm planning your evening for you. Go to the Sushi
Dan.
There's
a Pinkberry, too. So.
Oh. Ooh. Pinkberry and Harry Shearer. Are there two better things in life? No.
She says
no. No, there is not. All right, Harry, I know you're going to stick with us, which I'm so thrilled about, because nobody talks about politics like you do. And with the likes of the Tea Party and Christine O'Donnell, it's like we made this hour for you.
It's Christmas every day, isn't it?
It really is. All right, so we will continue with Harry Shearer live in studio. In the meantime, you know, when we had our go-to-meeting yesterday, you and I, Chris?
Yeah.
I didn't believe you when you said we have Philip Seymour Hoffman, Joan Allen, and Marcos Melisotz and Harry Shearer booked. I did not believe you.
That's right.
And then you showed me the booking sheets on GoToMeeting.
I certainly did.
Listen, I'm a little overexcited.
Uh-huh.
It's not every day you have Emmy nominee Harry Shearer live with you for an entire hour. It's 18 minutes after the hour, right back with Harry Shearer on the Stephanie Miller Show.
My opinion is you're nuts.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Steffi.
They call me her. They call me
Stephanie Miller.
That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name. That's not my name.
Oh, that's annoying. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 22 minutes after the hour, StephanieMiller.com, the website. You can email us all there. Paula says, Steph, every time a teabagger says unconstitutional, an angel farts. All right, don't feel like any thought is too small to send along to me. Thank you. We are live in studio with comedy genius Harry Shearer. Hello, Harry.
Hello, Steph.
Harry, what a year to be talking about politics. You know, just when you... These are like characters that you would create in one of your mockumentaries. Isn't it the... When you thought nobody's crazier than Sharon Angle, here comes Christine O'Donnell.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I don't know if you saw this, but apparently... someone who was a candidate for high office in the Wiccan world was disqualified because there was tape surfacing that she had admitted at one time having dabbled into politics.
See, that's funny.
Thank
now,
you. Took long enough to set up, didn't it?
But it worked.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I she's Sarah Palin's mini-me, sort of, isn't she? But who knew that, which I love that whole, there's some sort of All About Eve theme going on there, isn't there? But
it's empowerment. You don't recognize empowerment when you see it, babe.
No, no. Apparently I don't.
It's the ugly face of empowerment.
I mean, it's hard to even imagine a worse candidate. I mean, and now, have you seen the latest crew thing? I mean, they're saying she absolutely is a criminal. I mean,
well, she's a professional candidate.
Yes.
Right.
That's what you can say, is that she lives off her candidacy. That's her job, is running for office. As a fiscal conservative, so she can raise enough money to pay her rent from the campaign donations.
As a fiscal conservative running against entitlements.
It's a thing. You know, it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a way of life. It's a lifestyle. A lifestyle choice. Yeah. It's what the Brits call, the British Conservative government calls people who get welfare is, you know, it's a lifestyle choice. We have to, and not welfare, but unemployment.
Harry, where do you come down on the masturbation issue? I think that's the important thing here. Let's stop.
You know, somebody asked Ernest Borgnine why he had lived to such a ripe old age, and he said, just masturbate every day.
That was actually on Fox and Friends.
Was it really?
Yes, it was.
Did he masturbate on Fox and Friends? Only on the Friends.
Yes.
But yeah, so I'm with Ernie.
But you know, obviously there's such a, for people like you and I, there's this comedy side, but then there's a side that it's really, she's dangerous, isn't she? I mean, when you have somebody that says, you know, they have mice with fully functioning human brains and condoms spread AIDS and, you know, gay people it's an identity disorder. I mean, it just...
Well,
you know,
I think, you know, in the case of the mice with fully functioning human brains, it's just she's been to Disney World once too often. And believes that, you know, the guy walking around in the Mickey Mouse suit is a mouse. Because he clearly has a fully functioning human brain. So there's just a little overbelief in the Disney thing there.
Yes.
As to the rest of it, yeah, it's
What do you think is going to happen with the teabaggers, though? I mean, how is this going to play out in November? Because I've been saying I think it's just nothing but good news for Democrats.
Stephanie, I want to say this. Democrats have a history of underestimating the opposition.
That is true.
Mm-hmm. Democrats did it with Reagan. Democrats did it with George W. Bush. At this point in time, it would seem to me that that's not the way that Democrats should be, playing it.
Yes, but we know Ronald Reagan. We covered Ronald Reagan. Ooh. She's no Ronald Reagan.
No, she's no Ronald Reagan. No, she's sharp as a... What were those things? No, come on.
I mean, Ronald Reagan would get teabagged out of the party today, wouldn't he?
Well, of course, Richard Nixon would be castigated as a traitor by Ann Coulter. But that's basically just a tribute to the success over the last 30 years of that movement in moving the entire political dialogue to the right. That's all that proves, you know.
Yeah.
And as that continues, these people in 20 or 30 years will be regarded as hopeless liberals. Imagine that.
How much further to the right? How much room do they have on the
right to
go?
But you know, when I remember, you know, when Nixon was around, and it was improbable, inconceivable that there was righter than that, or righter than Reagan.
Right.
So it's...
Well, it seems like they just have a scosh, a half an inch next to Himmler, basically, to go any further to the right, in my opinion.
Very similar, and Joseph Goebbels had Nurbles at all.
Well, I mean, my dad and Goldwater, I always say, you know, I mean, they wouldn't be booted out of the Republican Party today. But I mean, as we keep going, I mean, Bill Clinton said it the other day, the Tea Party would consider George Bush a liberal. It's, you know...
Well, they do. I mean, part of the anger, they don't articulate it a lot, because I think the people who pay... a lot of the money don't want them to, but a lot of the anger, if you go back to the sort of the original meetings. You know, they were mad at the spending under the Bush administration, too. It's just that that's been tamped down. So, yeah, they do regard him as a liberal.
Mm-hmm. What?
I mean, in fact, you know, Bush introduced
TARP.
TARP, and yep. He also introduced the Medicare drug program without any way of paying for it.
Yep.
So.
Well, but I mean, and that's but interesting. I mean, I have to say, I think TARP is really probably the only successful thing George Bush ever did. And, of course, they're against that.
Well, there was Laura.
Yeah, and, you know, now I'm starting to reconsider those signs that say, miss me yet. I'm kind of going, you know, maybe a little compared to, I don't know, Rand Paul, maybe.
Yeah. All I can say is one underestimates these people at one's peril, especially since they have proven the ability to be able to, shall we say, focus large amounts of money on their behalf.
Well, I mean, but that's the other part of this, that it's some sort of grassroots, you know, uprising. I mean, these are Republican operatives largely that have funded these Tea Party mm-hmm. groups. I mean, it's so, you know, I think you're right, I wouldn't underestimate that, the yeah. amount of money they're pouring into these races.
And money makes a big difference in politics, as we know.
Yep. 29 minutes after the hour, we continue with Harry Shearer live on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Don't talk to me about
Stephanie Miller.
She's crazy.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 34 minutes after the hour. Tomorrow, John Fugelsang for all 3 hours. Friday with Fugelsang. Plus, Carrie Elleveld, mm-hmm. the advocate, to talk about her scuffle with John McCain.
That's right.
And also, former White House aide Van Jones. Harry Shearer is live with us all this hour. Check out his fabulous new documentary, The Big Uneasy, on the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. It'll be here at the Lemley Sunset 5 Theater in L.A., September 24th through the 30th.
Yep, and you can find out other places that it's playing at harryshearer.com.
Or at thebiguneasy.com, which has all the documentation backing the film as well. You can read every document that went into the making of the film.
And a debate has broken out on my Facebook page as to which Harry Shearer skit that somebody named Billy is trying to think of. And it's like, you'll have to be more specific. Christine thinks that he means the male synchronized swimming skit.
That's the only one people think about.
Yeah.
So.
Hey, you. I know you.
I know you.
Yeah.
I'll let him do it.
Sorry.
No, he did it. He did it.
All right.
We did it together.
Yes.
It has to be done together.
Like it has to be synchronized.
Thing. That's right.
Yes. See? I know. I'm sorry. Jim Ward had to leave for an audition, so you can't do your normal dueling Tom Brokaw's. You'll have to do it alone. I'm sorry.
Alone? I'll feel so lonely. And now, breaking news. An Lockheed L-1011 jetliner has almost crash-landed over Boca Raton, Louisiana, killing over 111 people on board. We'll have details later. But now here's Kelly Lang. That's for L.A. people only.
Yes.
Yes.
Kelly Lang at 11. That was fair warning, didn't you think, back then?
Yes.
Yeah? They knew what they were getting when a guy said, here's Kelly Lang. And they said, no, we want him. That's the guy.
You know, Harry, we will never again be in the days when Tom Brokaw is the main anchor, when the story about Mary Kay Letourneau broke and her lover...
Lily Falau.
Well,
what about Leon Klinghoffer?
That's right.
While at the same time...
Who was the only person killed on the Achilles Law.
While at the very same time, Harry, as you recall, we were invading Yugoslavia. And Slobodan Milosevic. All right, you know what I'm saying. All
yeah.
right, just never again will be there an intersection of L words in the news and Tom Brokaw.
Yeah.
That's one of the big three.
Although,
anchors.
I have two words to say to offer hope for anybody who misses all of that.
Yes.
Ira Glass.
Ira Glass.
Ira Glass. Ira Glass.
All right.
This American Life.
What is it? Why don't you just name the show without an L? Leave us wondering.
Yes.
It's American Life.
Harry, here's one question that that pops up from time to time in American politics. Why are the American people such dopes? The well, there's a new poll out on health care where pretty much everyone gets everything wrong. But and it, here's where the right wing wins, because they just keep repeating the same lies, and people go, there's death panels in there, and the deficit's going to go up, and my taxes are going to...
Well, I'm going to answer your question with this. Mm-hmm. I now spend part of my time in London, because my wife's British and she's doing a show over there. And you walk around London and talk to the street cleaner, listen to the guy, the pipe fitters, listen to just average people, not professors, not pundits, not people who have, you know, jobs, talking in public. And they understand and articulate better than most, you know, Harvard-educated people in the United States. There's a little thing called the educational system, and we haven't been doing it right here for quite a long time now. And it's one of the first things that gets cut when there are budget problems in states, as we know in California. And we just assume that that's okay, that that'll take care of itself somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no, it doesn't. And what you have is, you know, I mean, it's startling when you when you're in Britain, and I'm not saying that it's paradise and they do everything right. They do a lot of stuff wrong. They're fallible, flawed people like the rest of us. But just on the issue of have a conversation with somebody over there and you're just amazed. Oh, my God. And this is somebody who came through the state education system.
And what do they think about our candidates like Sarah Palin and Christine O'Donnell, which are apparently the best and brightest we have to offer from our educational system?
Well, you know, you have to appreciate the fact that they're the current mayor of London is on the World League Championship table of Daffy Mayors, second only to New Orleans' former mayor, Ray Nagin. So they don't have a lot to brag about in that department. Boris Johnson is a prize and a half. but, you know, it's if we had the best candidates in the world, there'd be people in Britain who'd want to smirk at it because, you know, we revolted from them.
Yep.
They still have a point to prove.
Exactly.
You should never have left the empire, young man.
So now the apparently the we can only be saved by the Republicans who have their brand new thing out today, Harry.
The pledge.
Yes, and it's got brand new ideas like tax cuts for the rich and repealing health care.
Mm-hmm.
And banning abortion. And there you go, some brand new ideas. What
You know the I think the most interesting performance right now. I mean, Sharon Engel and Christine O'Donnell, in some ways, you can say, can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. They can't help it. But Newt Gingrich, you know, Bill Clinton said it the other day, this guy knows better. It's just his shtick.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, just to watch that performance, to watch the Kenyan anti-colonialism brand go on, you just have to sit back and go, okay, babe, why not do it on a unicycle while you're at it?
By the way, speaking of Clinton, did you see this? He defended signing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, saying he threw Colin Powell under the bus. He said Colin Powell told him the policy would be more lax than it turned out to be. He said, when Colin Powell sold me on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, here's what he said it would be. Gay service members would never get in trouble for going to gay bars, marching in gay rights parades, as long as they weren't in uniform. That was what they were promised. That's a very different Don't Ask, Don't Tell than we got. He said he agreed to the policy because otherwise Congress would have passed an absolute ban on gays in the military, which, you know, I think is true. And then he said once Powell resigned, of course, the policy was enforced in a much more draconian way. But isn't that part of the, you know, what's really just so tragic about what happened in the Senate this week is that this policy was never even implemented correctly, right?
I'm just stunned that somebody was misled by Colin Powell.
How could that happen? Maybe he brought a little diagram of how Don't Ask, Don't Tell would have been implemented.
Photographs of of the mobile Don't Ask, Don't Tell trucks.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, you know, how sad is John McCain at this point? What a nasty little piece of work. I mean, he literally has flip-flopped on everything he's ever said. I mean, he's on tape saying, when the military comes to me and says it's time to overturn this, I will do it. And there he is, you know, accusing the Democrats of playing politics.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that this has been a show of massive flip-floppery on most parts, you know. This is not an issue that anybody wants to be not caught having a foot on both sides in this vituperative election campaign. And it's just, it's the, if you were strategizing, one would say this was probably the wrong time in the political year to bring this up for a vote, because it is the time when most people show their yellow bellies.
Yeah, but Harry, that's the part of this I don't get politically. When you have 75% of Americans and a majority of Republicans that are for repealing, don't ask, don't tell.
I know. It tells you that this is not a off-year elections are elections where a lot of those people don't go vote. And a lot of the people who are on the other side of this issue do, apparently. And that's what's got these people scared. And so the question, I mean, my basic criticism of the Obama presidency so far has has been, appropriately for a comedian, timing. Like when you bring stuff up, when they decided to do things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the irony of the Obama, and I think the problem that he's got now that I haven't heard talked about is he's in a very difficult position of coming in front of the American public and pitching patience. You know,
mm-hmm.
on the economy, just be patient. Just be patient. On Afghanistan, just be patient. That's not a good thing to be selling. I'd hate to be the guy whose boss said, "Now you're going to go out there today and knock door to door and sell patience, okay?" And I don't want to come back with any complaints.
Because Americans don't like instant gratification.
That's
at all.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, maybe pick one thing that you can say, "Hey, done."
Right.
Done diddly on. If you wanted to have some victories in your pocket, maybe this, given the poll figures, maybe this vote should have been done last year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, obviously healthcare kicks in today, and, you know, you have to hope that the truth of it will at some point overcome the lies that have been out there about mm-hmm. it.
Well, that's the question is, will the benefits of it be apparent enough to enough people? That's the big question, because the massive realization of it is years away. You know, there are aspects of it that kick in today, but the system as a whole, you know, isn't fully in place until 2014.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but even the economy, like you say, it's maybe hard to prove a negative, but I mean, obviously most economists say the recession is over. We are going in the right direction. We did the right thing.
Right.
TARP was a success. The stimulus was a success, you know, but you're right. It's hard when you're not there yet.
And when people, you know, when there's 10% unemployment, people aren't looking at what economists say.
Right. Right. It's how it feels. It's an emotional issue, which I guess is, like you say, creates the environment for the Tea Party, which cracks me up because people go, "Oh, but there's a lot of energy." It's like, well, yes, and they're at a monster truck pull. There's energy as well.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
you've emceed some of those, haven't you?
Yes, I did. That's my main income. But you know,
you're like, the queen. I thought the queen of the monster truck pull was going to be your new moniker.
Girl's got to make a living. Now, but I mean, look at Christine O'Donnell. She's basically following the same strategy Sarah Palin is, that we've gotten into this weird place in American politics where they will not talk to actual journalists. She literally said, "I am not going to do any more national media."
Well, you know, this is basically a spinning out of what started with Spiro Agnew in the 70s. And one has to say that the journalistic fraternity has played right along by getting dumber and worse. But, you know, when Spiro Agnew, Nixon's one-time vice president before he resigned in a cloud of criminality, started attacking the media, that was the beginning of a long campaign to discredit the journalism as a respectable or responsible or a force to which politicians had to answer.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had several election cycles, maybe a dozen now, where politicians have mastered the art of going to local news people in the areas where they're campaigning and doing very softball interviews with local news people and avoiding national news people. And now these guys are just tweaking it one step further and not going to any news people at all.
Yep, exactly. 46 minutes after the hour, we'll be back with more of Harry Shearer's expert political analysis, and we'll see, since Jim Ward's gone, if we can trick him into being our dancing voice poodle. 1-800-STEP-1-2, the phone number, toll-free from
what?
Anywhere.
You're what? Trick me into what?
Right back with Harry Shearer on The Stephanie Miller Show.
Try to be you paid, for goodness sake.
All right.
Otherwise, you're going to have all idiots listening to your program.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Stephanie Miller. Great to meet you. Hope you get my name. Oh, yeah. But what's puzzling you is the nature of my name.
Oh, yeah. It is the Stephanie Miller Show. 51 minutes after the hour. 1-800-STEP-12, the phone number. Toll free from anywhere. Live with the Emmy nominee, Harry Shearer. Tommy in Columbus, you're on with Harry Shearer.
Hey, I was wondering if I could, if Harry could make my life. Can I get a blessing from Reverend Lovejoy?
Well, you want a blessing for something you've done or for something you are or what?
Well, I've got a date coming up in the next weekend, and I'm just going to need some words of inspiration.
Well, the Lord shall shed his grace on thee and give you good luck. Lord shall escort you to second base.
There you go, Tommy. Thank you. You can see Harry Shearer.
That'll be $5.
By the way, did you see the breaking news this morning that yet another one of these, what's his name, Chris Bishop?
Yeah. Somebody. The guy in Atlanta?
Yeah, the guy in Atlanta with the 25,000-member church.
The anti-gay... Family values guy has apparently had some boy trouble.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it ticked off even Rick Sanchez.
Yes.
Now when Rick Sanchez gets what a story's about, then you know somebody's in trouble. Brain cells die when you watch Rick Sanchez daily.
That's true.
It is.
Yes.
Harry, I have to throw some celebrity stack at you because you're a man. And this is a Seal, you know Seal, the singer.
Yes, not the Seal.
Right.
No.
Seal the singer, not Seal the Seal.
No.
Okay, good.
Who is married, as you know, to supermodel Heidi Klum. He thinks men below the age of 40 are useless when it comes to commitment, and he only matured as a man when he was able to settle down. Or if you're able to marry Heidi Klum, I would think that would be another...
Well, that just means you get to have Tim Gunn around the house for dinner.
Yes, exactly.
That's what helped him settle down.
Make it work. Seal, make it work.
Heidi Klum.
What's with the rooching?
Heidi Klum agreeing to marry you. That'll take the wind
out of
you.
That'll settle you right down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Although it didn't help Billy Joel.
That is true.
Yeah.
See? Supermodels aren't everything.
Yeah, he wrote I Love You Just the Way You Are about his first wife and then divorced her to marry Christie Brinkley.
Yeah. Well, it's better than divorcing her on her cancer bed like Newt did.
Yes, this is true.
You know, men are dogs. Let's get over it.
So, yeah, here we go again with the social issues, I guess we've talked about. You know, the new Republican platform that came out today, the whatever that thing is.
The pledge.
Yeah, because they have a war going on within the Republican Party, don't they? We've got Tea Party on one side. They've got these social conservative dinosaurs on the other side that are insisting on, you know, gay bashing and anti-choice being in any kind of Republican platform.
Well, you know, I mean, the game the Republican Party has played for so long, and George Bush did it too, is to entice the social conservatives with the you know, red hot rhetoric about abortion and gays, and then when they get into office, really do nothing about it.
Yeah.
So the social conservatives, I think, with some justice, feel that they've been the victims of a long term shell game by the Republican Party, and I think that's really what drove a lot of people, what they thought was outside the tent, into the Tea Party, only to realize, which they haven't yet, that that's actually just another part of the tent.
Well, my favorite actually was in, did you see Montana, the news out of Montana, that the Republican Party there actually put into its platform outlawing homosexuality entirely?
Well, that's just another example of it. They'll say all sorts of outrageous things, but, you know, A, it's impossible, and B, they'll never try it. It's just another one of these bait and switch things that they do with the social right. It's... You'd think after a while, if there was any learning capacity in that cohort of the population, they'd figure it out. Hey, they're only saying that stuff to get our vote, and then they don't do anything. Which, you know.
Yeah. Now, we were talking before the break about Christine O'Donnell has said that she was not going to do any more national media. I love when some reporters on Fox News are even too tough for you.
Said reporters?
Yeah.
On Fox News. I heard that. Went right by.
Sorry about that. Yes, she considered, what's his name, Chris Wallace, too much of a, So she said, she swore up national media saying it's completely off the table because that's not going to help me get votes.
And then she's on Hannity.
Right.
Yeah, that was her last one.
She says,
explanation. Yeah. She said local reporters can't get to me because national media representatives are clogging her phone lines. So that's why she's not able to do any more.
Let's raise some money to get her a second phone line.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that. That's not tearing down. That's building up.
They will defend anything. Marco Rubio. Yeah, in Florida. He says he does not see a problem with Christine O'Donnell's past financial trouble and bizarre quotes, noting the system is not designed to elect a bunch of experts to the Senate.
Well, that's for sure. Marco, talk truth there.
He said, I think if you're more in touch with the real lives of everyday people, the better you're going to be as a representative of those people in the Republic.
Well, so, the foreclosure party then makes sense.
Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, let's get everybody who's because there's a lot of them still every day. So,
Of course, most people don't have a campaign to steal cash from.
That's right.
In order to get by.
Marco's quote reminds me a lot of what President Nixon said. There he is again. When he tried to appoint expert agreed was an undistinguished nominee for the Supreme Court, and he said, well, even mediocre people deserve to be represented.
Exactly. She's a loser just like you.
By the way, do you know the great quote about experts? Abby Hoffman once described an expert as a talkative guy from out of town.
Harry Shearer's new documentary on the fifth anniversary of Hurricane Katrina is called The Big Uneasy. You can find out more about it at harryshearer.com. If you're here in L.A., you can see it at the Lemley Sunset 5 Theater, September 24th through the 30th. And you can catch his brilliance in almost any format that's been invented. Radio, television, film, on the interwebs. Harry, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for taking time.
Are we supposed to bring gifts?
No gifts. Just you. Just,
thank God.
Just karaoke.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Steph.
Bye. Spinal Tap reunion and my birthday party. That's it for us. See you tomorrow on the Stephanie Miller Show.
Do you know where your children are on the internet? In the U.S., thousands of children are affected by internet crimes every day across the country. You can help prevent crimes against innocent children on the web. Help educate our children.
Join the PCP, Printer Cartridge Recycling Program. Don't toss that cartridge. Call 1-866-STOP-ABUSE.
It doesn't cost anything to participate. Don't just make a difference. Be the difference.
You can be the difference in preventing internet crimes across the nation. It is an effective project for schools, corporations, businesses, offices, private homes, and best of all, the environment.
Don't toss.
For every cartridge you return, the Child Abuse Unit receives a dollar towards the education on internet safety.
You can help prevent crimes against innocent children on the web. Educate your children.
And remember, it doesn't cost anything to participate. Don't just make a difference. Be the difference.
You can be the difference in protecting us and promoting internet safety. Don't toss.
Sponsored by the Child Abuse Unit, SPCC, 1-866-STOP-ABUSE.